I'm Nathan Rutherford, and welcome to Myth Madness. A young prince leaves his family's palace and makes his way to a neighboring kingdom. There, he hopes to find peace, but instead gets more than he bargained for. That prince, Bellerophon, or Bellerophontes as he was also known, was one of the most celebrated heroes in Greek myth, and is the focus of this episode. He was a son of the god Poseidon and a human woman named Eurynome, and is the hero who rides the winged horse Pegasus. On first glance, he is a classic hero. He rides a magic horse and is most famous for slaying a monster. But there are some deeper, darker layers to Bellerophon that hint at a more nuanced heroism, which is in fact pretty typical of a lot of Greek heroes. If you were to place him in a chronology of Greek myths, Bellerophon went on his adventures roughly just after the adventures of Perseus and a generation before other heroes like Heracles. Before getting into the specifics of his adventures far from home, let's get an idea of where this young prince came from. A few episodes ago, I discussed the trickster hero Sisyphus, the king and founder of Corinth. Glaucus was one of his sons, and Sisyphus tried to set up a marriage between Glaucus and Mestra, the daughter of the king Erysichthon of Thessaly. That attempt failed, and you can go back to the Sisyphus episode to find out why. Sometime afterwards, Glaucus was married to a different princess, this time a daughter of King Nisus of Megara. She is either named Eurymede or Eurynome. The sources disagree somewhat on her name. According to Hesiod's Catalogue of Women, Eurynome was no simple rebound girl for Glaucus. The goddess Athena had taken a special interest in Eurynome and taught her the arts, wit, and wisdom. Through the teaching of Athena, the princess became as wise as the gods. She was also extremely beautiful, and a sweet smell rose from her when she moved. So, she's smart, beautiful, and with great hygiene, Glaucus would be oh so lucky to have her as a wife. Fortunately for him, he also had Athena's help, and Glaucus was able to gain Eurynome as a wife by driving oxen for her. No word on how exactly that won Eurynome over. Maybe she just had a thing for shepherds. But Hesiod does say that Glaucus came bearing other gifts as well. Glaucus and Eurynome were married, but little did Glaucus know, Zeus, the king of the gods, bent his head in an oath and swore that Glaucus would never have children born from one father. Never having a child born from one father could sound like a prohibition from ever having children. At least it would if there wasn't already a way in Greek myth for certain heroes to have two fathers. According to Hesiod's catalogue, Eurynome lay in the arms of Poseidon, and from their affair, while living in the house of Glaucus, she gave birth to the son we call Bellerophon. This baby boy has two fathers, a divine father and a mortal father, the god Poseidon and the king of Corinth, Glaucus. This situation is generally understood as meaning the divine one was the biological father, and the mortal was the one who raised the hero. The writers Homer and Apollodorus do not even mention Poseidon as the father of Bellerophon. They instead only name Glaucus. That could just be because they were focusing on the mortals in their own retellings. But Apollodorus's version differs in another way from Hesiod's. Remember how Zeus supposedly ensured that Glaucus couldn't have his own children with Eurynome? Well, Apollodorus gives a detail that implies he didn't know that part of the story at all. He says there was another son of Glaucus, named either Deliades, Alcamenes, or Pyrrhon. Apollodorus says his sources weren't consistent on the name. So that's the family of Bellerophon. His father, Glaucus, his mother, Eurynome, and apparently his brother, Deliades. Altogether, they make up the royal family of Corinth. But interestingly, Bellerophon, or Bellerophontes, may not have actually been the hero's name. A scholion, or note, some ancient Greek made in the margins of a copy of Pindar's Olympian Odes, says the birth name of the prince was Hipponus. If that's the case, how did Hipponeus become Bellerophon? The answer may come from the meaning of the name Bellerophontes. Compare this word to Argiophontes, which was a title often used when honoring the god Hermes. It means Slayer of Argus, and directly refers to the time Hermes rescued Zeus's lover Io when she was turned into a cow and guarded by the many-eyed monster Argus. Hermes killed Argus and became Hermes Argiophontes, Hermes the Slayer of Argus. In the same way, Bellerophontes can be understood as a title meaning Slayer of Belleros. This gives us a bit of a reverse murder mystery, where instead of trying to identify the murderer, who we already know, we want to identify his victim, Belleros. Unfortunately, we don't know who this is. He is never mentioned in the existing Greek literature. There is no surviving tale of this unknown enemy of the prince Hipponeus. But it must be very ancient, and a core part of his myths, as every single source that references the stories of Hipponeus brands him as Bellerophontes, the murderer of Belleros. This title became his name. While Belleros is never identified, we may have a hint at the circumstances of his murder. Apollodorus says Prince Hipponeus, or Bellerophon as he is called, killed his brother. Apollodorus gives three different names for this brother. Maybe Belleros was just another, far older name for the same person. Apollodorus says Bellerophon was exiled from Corinth for the crime of killing his brother. I think it's safe to say that there was another, older version where Prince Hipponeus slayed someone named Belleros, maybe his brother, maybe another relative, and was exiled for the crime. The renamed Hipponeus, Bellerophontes, murderer of Belleros, or just Bellerophon for short, starts his famous adventures at this point. It's not a particularly heroic beginning for this so-called classic Greek hero. The exiled prince of Corinth left his homeland forever and traveled to Argos to join the court of King Protus. This is the same Protus who was the twin brother of the king Acrisios, I talked about at the beginning of the Perseus episode. Powerful kings like Protus often collect various VIPs at their courts, traveling poets and artists in need of patronage, mercenaries and adventurers pledging their services, and princes and kings who have lost their thrones or are exiled from their homelands. Bellerophon was part of this third group, and he presumably spent his time in Protus's court feasting with the other young nobles. But he was also there for a very specific reason, to do penitence for the killing he was exiled for, and to be purified by King Protus for this sinful crime. It would prove to be a short stay in Argos. In the Iliad, Homer gives a nice, detailed account of what happened in Argos, although he doesn't clearly mention why Bellerophon was exiled there. That doesn't necessarily mean Homer didn't know that version. In the Iliad, Bellerophon's story is told through the mouth of his grandson, a character in Homer's poem. Homer's heroes don't make a habit of slagging off their ancestors, so having that detail dropped from the poem may just be consistent for the grandson's character, and how Homer liked to write his poetry. What is in the Iliad, though, is a story that the gods granted Bellerophon beauty and manliness, and that Antaea, the wife of King Protus, was stricken with a great passion for the exiled prince. But try as she might, she could not convince Bellerophon to have sex with her. Angry at being rejected, she went to Protus, the king, and told him a lie, that Bellerophontes had tried to sleep with her even though she was unwilling. She asked her husband to kill Bellerophon and also implied that the prince may try to murder Protus. In other sources, Antaea's name is given as Stenoboea. This whole episode was the focus of two lost plays by Euripides called Bellerophontes and Stenoboea, and it's too bad we don't have Euripides' classical period versions. Apollodorus gives a less dramatic lie than Homer. He says Antaea just says Bellerophon sent her gross and suggestive messages, the ancient version of a dick pic. But I think Homer's attempted sexual assault with a side of possible murder is the spicier lie that best explains what happens next. but it would be nice to know where Euripides did fall in this tradition. Antaea told Protus her story, and Protus, trusting his wife, grew understandably angry. But he had a big problem. As much as Protus wanted to, he could not kill Bellerophon. Since the exiled prince was staying at the king's court, he was still a guest. And that meant the rules of Xenia, the ancient Greek concept of good hospitality, still applied. To kill Bellerophon and break Xenia would mean breaking a very important taboo. It would offend Zeus, and bring down on Protus the full wrath of the king of the universe. If Bellerophon was to be killed, it could not happen under Protus's Argive roof. So Protus decided to give Bellerophon a mission. A very important mission. One that would not only get Bellerophon far away, but also put him in a territory friendly to Protus. Protus decided to send Bellerophon to the home of Antaea's father, his father-in-law. He told Bellerophon to go across the ocean to Lycia, in modern-day Turkey, and travel to the court of King Iobates. Bellerophon was given a message to take to Iobates. Homer says that the message was written in secret symbols, on a special folding tablet that could not be read until it was opened. Inside, the message instructed Iobates to do his son-in-law Protus a favor and kill Bellerophon. Bellerophon made his way to Lycia, and King Iobates hosted him with full honors, not wanting to see the message right away. For 9 days, Bellerophon was entertained, and an ox was sacrificed on each of those 9 days. Finally, on the 10th day, Iobates asked for the message Bellerophon carried from Protus. He read what Bellerophon had supposedly done, and the instructions to execute his visitor. Of course, this put Iobates in the same situation that Protus was in earlier. Iobates had already entertained Bellerophon as a guest, had fed him and housed him, and so was bound by those same rules of hospitality, and could not have the visitor killed within his own house. Iobates probably could have sent Bellerophon on to someone else with another secret message, and hope that the next recipient would carry out the murder. But Iobates didn't do that. He had a better way to make sure Bellerophon would die. He would send this dangerous young man, a man who had supposedly tried to rape Iobates' daughter, against an even more terrible threat. Iobates tasked Bellerophon with killing the monster, the Chimera. Homer describes this beast as a monster of immortal make, with a lion front and a snake behind, a goat in the middle, and the head snorting out as breath flames of bright fire. The poet Hesiod says much the same, but further clarifies the description by saying the Chimera had 3 heads, a lion, one of a goat, and the third of a snake. Greek vases from the 6th century BC, wall sculptures, bronze statues, and mosaics from the later centuries of Roman times all show the Chimera in the same way, as a fierce lion with a goat head popping up out of the torso and a venom-spitting snake coming out where the tail should be. The Chimera was one of the offspring of the monster couple Typhon and Echidna, and like many monsters, it was terrorizing the land. It breathed fire, it rampaged through the countryside of Lycia, and it ravaged the herds of the nearby people. If Bellerophon was going to be successful in killing the Chimera, he was going to need a little help. That would come in the form of a horse, but not just any horse, a winged horse named Pegasus. I briefly introduced Pegasus in the Part 1 episode on the Adventures of Perseus. The earliest literary reference to the birth of Pegasus is in Hesiod's Theogony from the 7th century BC. It's simply said that when Perseus cut off the head of Medusa, out of her severed neck sprung the stout-hearted being Chrysaor, a man, and the horse Pegasus. This image is referenced in Greek art and told in much the same way by the later Roman period mythographers. Apollodorus's library adds that the father of Chrysaor and Pegasus was the god Poseidon. Different sources refer to either his seduction or his rape of Medusa, and some state this happened before Medusa was transformed into a monstrous, snaky form. If that's the case, that could mean Medusa was carrying a gestating Pegasus inside her that entire time. How Pegasus came to Bellerophon is covered by a couple different sources. The story people today usually know of how Bellerophon tamed the winged horse is that he was helped by the goddess Athena, that she gave him a golden bridle and that he was able to approach Pegasus with it, typically while the horse was drinking, and mount it with the bridle. The 5th century BC poet Pindar gives the earliest account of this version. He says Bellerophon tried to yoke Pegasus himself, but was repeatedly unsuccessful. Tired from his attempts, he went to sleep, and the goddess Athena appeared to him in a dream. She showed him a golden bridle and headband. She told him to sacrifice a snow-white bull to his father Poseidon, the horse tamer, and to use the golden bridle to charm Pegasus. When Bellerophon woke up, the bridle lay next to him. So Bellerophon followed Dream Athena's instructions. He sacrificed a white bull to Poseidon, and then built an altar to Athena. Afterwards, he seized the winged steed, set the bridle between its jaws, and was successful in mounting the horse. This version is mostly followed by other sources that came afterwards, but sometimes with some slight variations. Strabo, in the 1st century BC, clearly states that Bellerophon mounted Pegasus while the horse was drinking. Pausanias echoes Pindar by suggesting Bellerophon got most of his help from Athena, but he also says that Athena was the one who tamed and bridled Pegasus before delivering him ready for riding to Bellerophon. But the oldest known version, written around 200 or 300 years before Pindar's, is in Hesiod's Catalogue of Women. It's also a clearly different version. In this story, Poseidon gives his son Pegasus as a gift. Personally, I like this version a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense having Poseidon provide the winged horse, and it's consistent with other parts of early Greek mythology. First off, Poseidon is Bellerophon's father, so he should want to help out his son. Second, Poseidon was considered the tamer of horses, even winged horses. The Greek philosopher Plato describes a mythical statue of Poseidon, standing in a chariot and being pulled by not one, but 6 winged horses. And, going back to the earlier adventures of the hero Pelops, covered in a previous episode, it was Poseidon who provided Pelops with a chariot pulled by winged horses. In that case, Poseidon provided them to his lover, Pelops. But in this case, why couldn't he also provide them to his son, Bellerophon? Regardless of how exactly Bellerophon acquired Pegasus, it's usually interpreted as having happened just before he sets off to kill the Chimera. However, there is a variation on that too. The Roman Hyginus says that Bellerophon already had Pegasus when the whole incident with Antaea happened at the court of King Proetus. Hyginus said Proetus knew Bellerophon had the winged horse, and because it made him extra dangerous, sent him off to his father-in-law to be killed. But back to the Chimera. Now riding his winged horse, Bellerophon was ready to slay the fire-breathing monster. Homer, Hesiod, and Pindar all simply say he was successful. They don't give much details on the showdown between hero and beast. If you want more details on any cut and thrust, you have to look at later sources. Polydorus describes how using Pegasus, Bellerophon was able to soar above the Chimera and shoot it dead from above. Various examples of ancient Greek art show the three, horse, hero, and monster, together. One vase, from the 6th century BC, so around the time of Pindar, has Bellerophon impaling the Chimera on his spear. The actual weapon Bellerophon used was probably not a very important detail to the ancient Greeks. The deed was made possible due to Bellerophon's taming of Pegasus. Besides the winged horse, the archaic and classical period Greeks probably just thought he used the conventional weapons of the time, whether that be by spear or with a bow. However, a very late source, provided by a Byzantine scholar living in Constantinople around 1150 AD, does provide another, more theatrical version. In this one, Bellerophon used a spear with a lump of lead on the end. He is able to shove the spear into the mouth of the Chimera, and its fiery breath melted the lead. The molten lead then went down its throat and choked it to death. Regardless of how he killed the Chimera, with it finally dead, Bellerophon returned to Iobates. I like to imagine he brought its body with him as proof, and then tossed the three-headed corpse down on the ground of Iobates' throne room. Iobates probably looked down and gulped, secretly disappointed that his task did not send the man to his death. What he did next is consistent in three sources across the span of ancient Greek history: archaic Greek Homer, classical Greek Pindar, and Roman-era Greek Apollodorus all agree. Bellerophon was sent to fight against the Solomoi. Not too much is known about them, but they were a fierce group of people living relatively nearby to Ayyubades' kingdom. They lived in a mountainous region in southwest Anatolia, just to the north of Ayyubades' Lycia. Their land was known as Milius by some of the Greeks, and the tribe was supposed to be descended from a son of Ares. We are only told that Bellerophon defeated them, but Homer does add that this was the fiercest battle Bellerophon had with men. Fitting, since Ayyubades' next move was to then send Bellerophon against another fierce tribe, this one made up of all women, the Amazons. These are a famous tribe of female warriors and hunters. They are featured in a number of ancient Greek epic poems and myths, so I won't go into a lot of detail on them here. But they were apparently invading Ayyubades' kingdom, and he wanted Bellerophon to fight them off and hoped he'd die in the process. Again, Bellerophon was victorious. Using Pegasus, he could keep out of reach of the warrior women's weapons and rain down his own arrows on top of them, while he flew through the chilly air above. The Amazons were soon forced out of Lycia. Ayyubades heard of Bellerophon's victory and simply could not believe it. Homer and Apollodorus explain that the king spun one more entangling treachery. He gathered up a group of some of the bravest men in all of Lycia, and he set them ready to ambush Bellerophon when he made his way back to the palace. This plot also failed, and Bellerophon killed them all. And then Ayyubades had a complete change of heart. Homer says he recognized that Bellerophon must be descended from the gods in order to have such successes. Once all his attempts had failed, and with his enemy clearly descended from the gods, Ayyubades said, "I give up. Take my daughter." Because Ayyubades offered his other daughter, Antaea's sister, to be Bellerophon's wife, and also offered to share half his kingdom with the half-god Hero. Homer does not name this wife of Bellerophon, but late source Apollodorus says her name was Philonoe. According to Hyginus, another late source, when Proetus's lying wife Antaea found out her father had not only not killed Bellerophon but also married him to her sister, she killed herself. With his new domain in Lycia, Bellerophon cut out a large piece of land and set his subjects to plowing and planting orchards. His wife gave him three children, two sons named Isandros and Hippolochus, and a daughter named Laodamia. For this Greek hero, at least, it sounds like we've gotten a happy ending. Unfortunately, that is going to turn out to be very, very wrong. At some point, Bellerophon decided to set out on a whole new adventure. The reason why is not clear. Maybe the many years of ruling and raising a family in Lycia made him nostalgic about his days as an adventurer. Maybe his successes simply made him feel invincible, or on a level similar to that of the gods. Whatever the reason, he had a very clear idea of what to do next. As Pindar puts it, he intended to reach up to the heavenly homes of the deathless gods and share the company of Zeus. After all, had not the legendary kings Tantalus and Ixion feasted with the gods themselves? Hadn't Bellerophon's own mother learned the wisdom of the goddess Athena? Surely Bellerophon, tamer of Pegasus, slayer of the Chimera, scourge of Solomoi and Amazons, surely he had done enough to pop in, at least for a moment, on the summit of Mount Olympus, to see the throne of Zeus, the great king of the universe? And how was he to get up there? Why, fly up on the back of the winged horse Pegasus, of course. But Bellerophon did not reach the bronze-floored homes of the gods. Why? Let's go through the different versions of what happened to him, but we'll start at the latest recorded version and then go back through time. In the 2nd century AD, there's the Roman mythographer Hyginus. In his Astronomica, Bellerophon flies higher and higher on Pegasus and then makes the big mistake of looking back down to Earth. The height terrifies him. He panics, he falls off Pegasus, and plummets to his death. In the Fabulae, another work by Hyginus, there is a line about Bellerophon falling onto the plains and dislocating his hip. It sounds like Hyginus is referring to the fall from Pegasus here, but the placement of this text by Hyginus is right after the description of the fight against the Chimera. This is the latest recorded version. I think it leaves something to be desired. It doesn't make sense to me that Bellerophon, who has ridden Pegasus many times already, who has fought from horseback on Pegasus, and who is presumably also a good horseman generally, would suddenly realize he has a fear of heights and then fall out of his saddle? No, I don't buy it. Sounds pretty suspicious. So, what about an older source? Pindar's Odes, written about 700 years earlier in the 5th century BC. Pindar's Ishmian Ode simply says Pegasus, while flying high, threw his master Bellerophontes down to earth. In retellings of this, the typical reason given is that Bellerophon's hubris in thinking he could simply fly up and drop in on the gods of Mount Olympus offended Zeus, and in retribution, the king of the universe sent a fly to go and bite Pegasus, making the horse buck and forcing its rider to fall. This is a fairly well-known detail, but funny enough, I have had a lot of trouble finding a specific ancient source that actually mentions Zeus sending a fly. I think it's probably in a scholia, or a margin note some ancient Greek made in the margins of a written-down ode. If that's the case, this fly detail may have originated after Pindar first wrote the ode, as it's not found earlier. However, even if that's true, I think it's likely that Bellerophon's hubris was still the original reason for his fall from Pegasus. So Pindar has Bellerophon not make it to Olympus. But what about Pegasus? Where did he go? Sure enough, one of Pindar's Olympian odes gives the fate of the winged horse. He now dwells in the ancient stalls of Zeus upon Olympus, after presumably continuing on without a rider. Going even earlier in recorded history, let's go to the oldest Greek literature that references Bellerophon and Pegasus. Hesiod's Theogony was written about 200 years earlier than Pindar's odes, and it mentions two things consistent with what came later. It says Pegasus and Bellerophon killed the Chimera together. Okay, makes sense. And also one more thing, that Pegasus flew away and left the earth and now dwells in the house of Zeus and carries thunder and lightning to Zeus when he needs it. It's possible this line either refers to what happened to Pegasus after he continued up to Mount Olympus without Bellerophon, like in our later Pindar tradition said, or this is hinting at a different tradition altogether, where Pegasus is associated with Zeus's lightning bolts. Interestingly, Pegasus's name very well may refer to the activities the horse performed after arriving on Mount Olympus. The name Pegasus is often compared by scholars to the Luwian Hittite word Pihasos, which sounds a lot like Pegasus and also means lightning. If we assume both Pindar and Hesiod are pulling from the same or similar myth traditions, we can put all of this information together. Both agree that Bellerophon needed Pegasus to help kill the Chimera. Both say that Pegasus left the earth. Pindar says Bellerophon was thrown off in the attempt. Both say Pegasus is now in Olympus. Pindar says he lives in Zeus's stables, and Hesiod says he serves as Zeus's pack animal. But what about the earliest recorded reference to the Bellerophon myth, the one found in Homer's Iliad? He quickly summarizes most of the myth, talking about Bellerophon's stay with Proetus and Antaea, being sent to Iobates, and his slaying of the Chimera. Interestingly, though, Homer's Iliad does not mention anything about Pegasus or Bellerophon falling to earth. This doesn't necessarily mean Homer did not know it. The poet just may have thought it was out of scope for the story he was trying to tell. In the Iliad, the Bellerophon story comes up when two heroes are telling each other about their famed and glorious ancestors. Even if Homer knew what happened to Bellerophon, he likely wouldn't have told this part of the story, as it would have been out of character for the hero telling the story. If you're on a battlefield, bragging about the great deeds of your ancestors, you're probably not going to say he needed the help of a magic winged horse, or end your tale with a, "Oh, by the way, he also offended the gods and was almost thrown to death by that same magic winged horse." Nevertheless, though, Homer does provide a hint that there was more to the story. He says that eventually Bellerophontes was hated by all the immortals, and he wandered alone about the plains of Alius, eating his heart out, and keeping to the wilderness far away from the rest of humanity. Homer also adds that other nasty fates befell Bellerophon's children too. His son, Isandros, was killed by Ares in a close-fought battle against the Solomoi. His daughter, Laodamia, ended up becoming a lover of Zeus, had a child with him, but also ended up getting killed by the angry goddess Artemis. In the classical versions, Bellerophon fell from the sky and became disabled in some way. Sometimes he was struck blind, although how a great fall can make someone go blind, I have no idea. I think this was originally a punishment just given to Bellerophon because he wanted to spy on the gods, since there are other examples in Greek myth of people being struck blind after seeing what they shouldn't. If you follow Pindar's versions, Bellerophon hurt his legs. A fragmentary Athenian play had Bellerophon crippled from his fall and then die after repenting for his crime. In the end, Bellerophon goes full circle. He started with a mysterious murder of an unknown person and was exiled. Then he sought refuge with a neighboring king, was accused of trying to sleep with his host's wife, and had that same king plan his demise. But even with all of that, he picked up the favor of some gods, either Poseidon, Athena, or both, and became the rider of the winged horse Pegasus. Bellerophon ended up at the court of King Iobates and was tasked with killing the Chimera and some barbarian tribes. His fortune looked like it had finally turned positive. When successful, he was rewarded with a wife and a kingdom. But that, eventually, wasn't enough for him. Those strange, dark undercurrents to his character came again. He thought his success was due to his own merits and not the favor of the gods that helped him. He thought his glory made him a peer of the gods and tried to join them. For this hubris, he was punished. Lost Pegasus, the whole reason for his glory, and he wandered the land, crippled and scorned. And that's all for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please get the word out and tell a friend. As always, thank you for listening.